Started, the first little bit is a intro anyway. It's not the exciting stuff. So my name's Damien Brady. I work for a company called Octopus Deploy. So I'm not going to talk about Octopus here at all, but if you have any questions about that, hit me up. Same thing with Application Insights. I'll point out as well that a lot of the stuff you see here, there's a lab on tomorrow, one of the learning lab section things that are on, Thursday morning, 9:45, in the learning section as well, which actually practically goes through and gets you to add Application Insights to an ASP.NET website. So you'll be able to get hands-on and actually do some of this stuff, which is pretty cool, tomorrow. So don't miss that one. All right. So I'm going to talk about a few things here today. I just want to get a little bit of a show of hands. Who's used Application Insights before? Okay, only a handful of people. All right. And those guys, are you using it in production right now? That's kind of... Okay, a few, not quite as many. Okay. First, I'm going to take a step back from that, though, and talk about the idea of life cycle. So you're probably all familiar with application lifecycle management, aka DevOps, aka whatever the next buzzword is. But part of what the problem is in IT, or has been traditionally, that DevOps is trying to solve is the idea of developers doing their work and then throwing it over the fence into a production environment, and then you don't know anything about it anymore. And it's really common to be in an organization where the developers and those guys don't really have any visibility of production at all. Particularly in larger organizations with a lot of governance as well, it's difficult to know what happens behind this wall, right? So we're going to talk about the idea of life cycle and getting that information fed back to your development team and even your business analysts and your PMs and so on to find out what's happening after you deploy to production, even if you don't have physical access to those machines or to those cloud services. I'm going to look at Application Insights. So a lot of the demos, or pretty much all of the demos here, are based on Application Insights. But if you're not using App Insights, then that's okay. A lot of the concepts are still there. And there's a few things at the end that I'm going to talk about that don't really have anything to do with Application Insights. So other tips and tricks that can help you mitigate issues when they happen in production and identify these problems and sort them out when they occur. So that'll be at the end. All right, so I mentioned that traditionally software development's very good at getting the developers to do their work and then it goes to production, the developers don't have it. So this is my idea of like the traditional, even the agile application lifecycle process, right? You get your guys in ties who will do their documentation and they'll work out what application needs to be written and all that sort of stuff. And they end up with this requirements document which they give to the developers, right? That developer in front who's wearing a tie, he's not happy, he's looking for a job, that's why he's got a tie. So they will do that work, and obviously because they're agile, they'll use some kind of agile process, right? They'll use Scrum or something for their software development. And in Scrum, you know, they'll go through their iteration and so on, and they'll come up with a potentially shippable product, right? Have you all heard that term before? Basically means at the end of each sprint, you have a thing that can be shipped, and that's a fantastic way of writing software. So they'll do this for a couple of weeks, or they'll do it for a week sprint or something and come up with something that can be deployed. And now this is a good team, so you can deploy it every time. So what happens next is kind of where it falls over. There's a guy sitting behind a wall, and he has access to production, right? So the developers package all this stuff up. They write a gigantic Word document describing how to deploy the software, which is, don't get me started on that one. And then they'll throw this package over the wall with the instructions, and the guy at the desk will deploy it to servers in production. But there's still this gigantic... Oh, sorry, we're in the cloud now. So there's still this gigantic wall in the way, right? So the developers, they know what they wrote, they know what's working in their test environments and staging environments and stuff like that, but the production environment's still behind the wall. So they'll go and they do their next iteration, and it will create another package, and I'll throw that over the fence, and so on. And this cycle continues, but it's one way. So that's the big problem. There's no actual cycle here. I mean, there's a couple of cycles, but they're not across the entire process, right? The developers don't know what's happening in production. All they know is what's happening in their mimicked production, like their test environments or staging environments. And often that's not enough. You can do all the testing and things that you want, but in the real world, It's what happens in production that matters. So I'm going to talk about a few different things that you care about as developers and as a team, I guess, to do with stuff that's in production. So outages is the first one. I used to work for a company who did internet banking software. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to say who it is. But they had occasions where, so they'd sell the software to their customers who were banks and building societies and things like that. And we'd also host it. But what would happen is the developers, we still had pagers. So whoever was on like on call would have a pager. And it'd go off at 3 o'clock in the morning because this client of ours had a bunch of customers calling their help desk to say, the site's down, I can't do anything. And these built up and their help desk went, well, something's wrong. And they called our help desk, which forwarded on to the developers who got paged. And then we generally have to call the guy back and get an earful for about 20 minutes. And we didn't know anything about it, right? We had monitoring software, but it was inside our environment. So the monitoring software went, pinged our application, go, yeah, everything's fine. But we were hitting it from inside, right? So that was a big problem. We thought we had monitoring, but really we were just monitoring not what everybody else sees. So the outages are a big thing, and there's a really, really simple solution for that, which, if nothing else, go home and implement it in the next, well, even the break between this one and the next session, you could implement that on your sites, like in that break in a couple of minutes. So we'll talk about that. Errors, there's obviously the exception stuff. So I'll show you a little bit of stuff to do with the exception handling and errors and surfacing those when they happen in production. There's also the concept of feature usage. So whether people are actually using aspects of your application, you can get a lot of metrics around that as well. So if you release a new feature, maybe people don't actually use it, or they don't know it's there, or they're not clicking on the things that you want them to click on. That's really useful to know in production, and that's something you can't test. You can have all the QA departments you want, but they're not going to tell you how users are actually going to use your application. And then finally, how do you handle these issues as well? So we're kind of moving away from application insights at that point. We've identified that there's a problem, but we want to help fix the problem. Okay, so I'm a developer. Web developer. So all of the stuff I'm going to show you is based on web development, but I just want to highlight a couple of things. I'll show you in a second, but this application insights isn't just for ASP.NET. So if you're sitting there going, well, we're writing Windows apps or we're writing Android apps or anything like that, there's so many SDKs that plug into the application insights framework. I'll show you a little bit of information about them, but frankly, I don't write that stuff, so I'm not going to be terribly helpful. The API itself is pretty much the same across platforms, though. You can store the same kind of information. Obviously, some stuff's not relevant if you're not on the web. But anything you see here, you can probably do with those with the other SDKs as well. All right, so because I'm a developer, I thought the best way to demo this would be to write an app. So I wrote a demo quality app. The code's on GitHub. I would encourage you to not write your code like this. But what I want you to do during this, because this is all about getting metrics from production, right? I would encourage you, if you have a phone or something, I'm going to be the only speaker here who will say, play with your phone while I'm speaking. Go to this thing. There's a QR code. They actually work. Or you can just type the URL. It's not that long. So while I'm going through these demos, I would like you to continually just play with that application. Now, the application is really, really complicated. It's this thing called Animal Wars. We have categories of animals, and they fight, and they don't really fight. You just choose who's going to win in the fight between these animals, right? And the idea is we collect metrics, and we find out which animals are the most popular and all that kind of stuff, all right? How's everyone going getting to that URL? Is it up?
Yes.
Good. I mean, that would have been a good demo, sure, but not yet. Anyone need more time? What's that, getting errors? Yeah, that's kind of, yeah. By the way, if you get exceptions and things like that, we'll get to that. That's, yeah, they're deliberate. It's undocumented features. Yeah, it's a feature. It's an undocumented feature. So if you get an exception, just like go back, keep trying, do some stuff. I just want to get some metrics around it. We'll talk about those exceptions and how you'd pick them up too. So for those of you who don't have a device, I'll show you what it should look like, because can everyone see that all right? It's a really complicated website. So we've got, it's responsive too. I'm a real web developer. So we've got these categories of animals, so we'll just choose land animal. Oh God, that's not good. That one shouldn't be. All right, refresh. Did somebody say none of them work? Just like refresh, maybe. There might be cache stuff. Okay, a refresh fixes things. See, when I was making sure that everything was working, I deliberately broke it, and then I changed it so it worked again, but stuff must be cached. So just like refresh. Is it working? Whew, okay, that's good. All right, so the idea is you get these two animals. Who's going to win in a fight? Clearly, the spider's going to win. So you do that, and you slowly go on. The idea is we collect metrics. Pretty awesome, hey? All of these images just came from Flickr. Anyway, so that's what it is. But we're going to get metrics on this. There's a few errors that show up, so I want to make sure that we can capture those errors in production. All right, where's my thing? So the first thing I want to look at, and this is a really basic one, is handling these outages. So I told you that we have metrics at this other company we worked at, and we had monitoring, and it was hitting the servers, but that's not our production site. So Application Insights gives you some really cool tools just to ping a server or run some web tests on a server as well. So I've got my Application Insights here. Oops, So I've got my Application Insights. This is my web app. It's obviously you saw Azure website. I'm just going to pull that down, so stop it. This is obviously totally realistic that this would happen, but can everyone confirm?
It's not working anymore.
Service is unavailable. All right, so we go to Application Insights. We see we've got an alert even popping up in the UI, but obviously you're not going to be sitting in this UI the entire time. We can see we've got alerts here, our availability's gone down, there's failed requests, there's a lot of failed requests, excellent. And so we can see this alert that we've created for this exception, right? Sorry, that's the exception alert, we want the ping. We'll get to the exception alert, I'm jumping ahead of myself. So what I've done is I've set up an alert in Application Insights that will just ping me if there is it's down from more than three locations. So I'm just going to edit this test just so you can see what it looks like. It's basically just a ping test, I'm hitting URL. Now this isn't tied to my code, by the way. This is just hitting a URL and telling me whether it's correct, whether it's working or not. It's also having a look at any dependent request as well, so it'll tell me if any dependent resources are down. It'll retry a few times, and this will run every 5 minutes. So every 5 minutes, it's going to run this test from five different locations around the world. So this problem of us having our monitoring tool inside our firewall kind of goes away because we're hitting it from Chicago, San Jose, Ashburn, Miami, and Sydney as well. The success criteria you can change, but basically I'm just saying if it's a 200, everything's fine. You can also match on content as well. So what a lot of people will do is they'll have a single URL in their site which will give a status report essentially of what's happening, and they can just match that content. So if some part of the underlying system is down, they'll return different content, this test will fail, and we'll get an alert. Now the other thing that we get, and I'm going to do the horrible thing of showing you my email. I got this alert in my email. So that threshold was reached, and I got an email alert. And we can see that there were 11 server exceptions. That's not the right one. Let me show you the one that I should have got. Alert, server exceptions, ping. All right, this hasn't come through. It's only hitting every 5 minutes. So this failed at three locations for 5 minutes. So it's alerting me as soon as something happens. All right? So that's pretty cool. You might have noticed, yeah, so not tied to my code at all. You can hit any URL. You could set up an Application Insights alert that'll tell you when Google's down, for example. You'll probably know because if you're a developer. You'll be there more than every 5 minutes anyway. The other thing you can do, so this is just a ping test. You can also do a multi-step test, which is essentially a web test that you can create in Visual Studio. So you can say, hit this URL, click on this link, put in this information and click submit, and this is what you should get. And you can run those steps every 5 minutes from all these locations across the world and work out that your app is actually behaving correctly, not just responding with a 200. So that's quite cool as well. Awesome. That one's pretty straightforward. And like I said, you could set this up in a couple of minutes. I mean, you could set it up now, but I prefer you to keep hitting the app. All right. So that's outages. The next thing I want to talk about is errors. So errors basically come in two forms. So there's the exceptions, crash errors and things like that. And then there's the other less obvious errors, which I'll talk about in a sec. But so obviously a lot of people said it's not working, stuff's broken. Who noticed once it got working again? Who noticed an exception when they went through the app, when they had a look at some stuff? A couple of hands, cool. Can anyone tell me what it was? Nope, you all saw it, but nobody knows what it was. I should probably bring this online again, shouldn't I? So the error was, we had we've got all the categories of our animals. Yeah. This should start again, otherwise the demo is not going to be great. So we had our categories of animals. We had our land animals, sea animals, and so on. But we also had these imaginary ones. So let's say this is a new feature that we've just released, imaginary animals, where we move fast at animal wars. So that, when you go to the land animals, let's choose that, sorry, the imaginary animals, you get an exception. So this is something that's happening in production. So this is the code locally. And I'm just going to run this locally because that's the first thing you do as a developer. Somebody reports an exception, you say, can't repro. It works fine on my machine, closed won't fix. Something like that. But to be serious, that's a real issue. Like, if you can't reproduce the thing on your local environment, what do you do? Like, you're shut behind this wall. You can't see what's going on in production. So you'll notice that when we go to this portal, I've given a nice error message and I've given an ID, a globally non-unique ID, which we'll see. But I've basically handled it gracefully the way that everybody will. But we've got this exception handling. I'm just going to show you in the code what we're doing. So this is MVC, not vNext, so the existing MVC, mainly because that was easier to manage. And I've got this Application Insights code in there. Can we all see this? Readable? Cool. So there's two lines of code here that do the work. There's this guy, which instantiates a telemetry client, and that comes from Microsoft.Application Insights. And then we have this telemetry client dot track exception, and we pass it the exception and then any other details we want. So here's our globally non-unique ID because I'm taking a GUI and just pulling the last six characters out. Don't do that, by the way. But for the purposes of this, it's useful, and it makes for a readable one as well. So that's pretty basic way of doing it. Actually adding application insights to an application, a web application especially, is really quite easy. So when you spin up a new Visual Studio, you can do a file new project and include it as you create the new project. Or for an existing project, you can right-click, add application insights. And there's a few NuGet packages and things like that you can add to get a bit more detail. To get a bit more in there. So this is a file new project. Load failed, awesome. So when that loads, we can just right-click, choose add application insights. Why would that not be loading? Cool. So right-click, add application insights telemetry. And that will add a whole lot of bunch of stuff to your application, mainly configuration. So if we skip back to this guy, we can see there's a configuration file, application insights config. And it just has a whole lot of details about what types it needs, what dependencies there are. The important one here is your instrumentation key. Now, I've done the stupid thing of just having the same instrumentation key in my dev and my production, which is a terrible idea. Obviously, you'd be using some kind of product to manage your deployments across multiple environments, and you'd have configuration settings for those environments. But so that's pretty much all you need. Now, it's a really similar story if you're doing Java apps or you're doing iOS apps or Android apps or something. There's an SDK. You include that, set some configuration with an instrumentation key, and then start publishing events. So this is what I'm doing with my exception. The reason I use this little reference is I can copy that, go to my application insights for Animal Wars, and then just search for that exception or for that code when this finishes loading. So somebody can call you up, say, I got this error. And because we added that to our additional detail, we can drill into that exception and see that it was a system argument out of range exception on the get single war method in our data layer. Anyone thinking about what the error was probably likely to be? Yeah, it's different data in production and development. So I've only got one imaginary creature in production through an exception. I can't repro it because I've got plenty in my test environment. We can get the exception message, and we've got an entire call stack as well. This is just my code. I can get all of the code, so the system code as well. So you can see there's a lot of information that you can get just by doing this telemetry client dot track exception and passing it an exception. And this obviously comes from your production environment. So even if you can't repro, you get a lot of detail. Pretty cool. Does anybody use this now? No? No hand? One hand? Anyone going to use it? Yeah, awesome. That's good. There were maybe about 20 people. Awesome. So the other thing is, and you might have seen this before, that I set up another alert. So this is the one I accidentally went to before, this exception alert. So I've basically said if I get more than 10 server exceptions inside 10 minutes, I want you to send me an email. Something's gone wrong. So again, in my email alerts, oh, there we go. We've got our, this was down and it came back up. So this is the server exceptions. We got 11 server exceptions over the last 10 minutes. There's something wrong. So we get notifications when stuff is going wrong as well. If anybody was in Troy Hunt's talk, you would have seen there's a lot of other alerts you can get from web apps as well. But these ones work on the telemetry data rather than the internals of how a web app works as well. So this can be not just a web app, but it can be a iOS app or something like that as well. You can tell whether people in the field who are using your iOS app are encountering exceptions or errors.
Can this hook into things like Slack or something?
So the question was, can this hook into something other than email, essentially, so things like Slack? And the answer is no, not at the moment. This will just send emails. However, if you go to the web apps, everybody knows that Azure changes, you know, every 4 minutes. So if you go into the web app stuff and have a look at the notifications here, I think it's in here, and have a look at your alerts in here. When you create an alert for your web app, and this isn't Application Insights, when you create an alert for your web app, you can see that there's emails, but there's also a webhook section. So I wouldn't be surprised if that webhook section got added to the App Insights alerts soon. I don't have a date, I don't actually have any more information on it, but it's the kind of thing that I went and clicked in there and checked after you asked the question before I said no, because it might have popped up in the last few minutes. So that's the way you'd hook these things in as well. Yep.
Just quickly, when you have that key that you passed in, that number, so you can go and search for your exception, let's just take you've got 100 users using the site, and as we know in certain sites, certain users will go and have lots of problems and others won't. Can you pass more than just one key in there? So
Yep, so the question was, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, that I'm passing in a key here to say this is the key for my error. Can you pass in more information, like whatever you want? And essentially, this is a dictionary, a string-to-string dictionary. There's also, so this is properties, a string-to-string dictionary. There's also metrics that you can add in there as well, which is string to double, I think. Why they chose double, don't know. But it's basically metrics on it. So you could periodically, or every request, have a look at what the CPU's doing and track that information against the exception and say, this exception occurred, and this metric about server load is saying that we're 80% CPU loaded on the server when this exception happened. So there's not really a limit of these metrics. There is if you're using the free edition. So the more you pay, obviously, the more of these things you can add. I think I've got those pricing details here. There we go. So this is, we're talking about other data points, I think. So we've got 5 million other data points that you can add if you're using the free one, 15 million data points. So if you're adding a metric called, you know, server load or something like that, that's generally one data point per month. No, if you log it per instance, sorry. So per month, you can hit, you can add 5 million of these things. Unless you pay more, you can get 50 million. So you've got to be a little bit careful if you've got a very high load. Does that answer the question? Cool. All right. Any other questions before I move on? Awesome. Let's skip back here really briefly. So the next thing I want to talk about is usage. And this kind of comes into the error section as well. Did anybody else notice any other problems with the site while they were using it? Anyone? Nobody really paying attention to it? Cool. I'll show you. What was that, sorry?
The flying animals goes to
the
land animals after
you. Yeah, so the flying animals goes to the land animals after you submit. And that's actually true for all of them, except for imaginary, which doesn't work. If you do sea animals, for example, and submit a choice, it will kick you back to the land animals. So the question is, how would I know that this is occurring? Because this is something that might not get noticed, right? This is, it's not really an error. It's not an exception. We're not getting anything, you know, going wrong. But it's something that's definitely a problem. So sea animals, clearly an octopus is going to win. But now we're back in land animals. Even our, like, integration tests and unit tests and stuff may not pick this up. So this may leak through to production. So this isn't the best way of identifying these kind of problems. Obviously, a good QA process is the way to identify these problems. But there are some things you can do. If we have a look back in our application insights, go back to Animal Wars, and have a look at, where are we, Metrics Explorer. And we'll scroll down and have a look at these page views. This might be an indicator that something's a little bit wrong here. We've got 491 requests for land animals, and then the other ones are much lower. We've got a lot of people trying to break it, which is awesome. But the other ones are a lot lower. There's obviously something going on. I wouldn't have expected, you know, the land animals to be more than double everything else. So that's an indication. Now, obviously, this is only of limited use if you've got these kind of problems, but it's much more useful if you're actually working out whether people are using your features. So let's say I had in this site a list of the most popular animals or the most the animals that win the most, for example. Maybe I put that in a hard-to-find place. I would expect a lot of people to go there, but I can see immediately with these metrics that people aren't visiting this site. So this is kind of out of the box. When you install Application Insights on a web app, it will just add these metrics so you can see how many URLs are hit. But the question is, what about more granular bits of information? So I'll pretend again that I just added the lion to the list of animals. I want to know whether anybody uses the lion. I've got this theory that people use it a lot. I'm going to leave it there. But maybe if I added a different animal, people wouldn't use it. I can take it away. It's not going to be a big issue. I've also got a theory that the default Twitter Bootstrap thing, nobody clicks on the home link here. So maybe I can just get rid of that. That's my theory, and I'm actually interested to see whether that's true. So what I've done, I've got two other metrics. I'm going to show you them first. These are my specific events, things that I care about specifically. whether a lion's been selected, and it looks like it has. It's 81 instances of that lion being selected, so that's pretty cool. I think people are using it, especially out of 500 requests and, you know, however many animals are in the set. That's pretty good. That home link's been clicked 21 times, which actually surprises me. I didn't think anybody clicked that link, especially if you're all on, like, phones. You got to do the hamburger and then the home link. So that's surprising. So that one, that proved me wrong. People are actually clicking on that home link, so I won't remove that guy there. So I'm doing this in two different ways, right, these metrics, or these other... The question was, can I find out if that's one user? That's a really good question. Damn it. So here's this grid, right? This is total events by event name. So what I could do in here as well, let's see if I can, let's just add a new chart. Let's see if I can do this, by the way. I'm not 100% sure whether I can. But I'm going to add a new chart. I'm going to aggregate it by unique session. This is where, like, because this is point and click stuff, I prefer to write code. There we go, sessions. Unique sessions. Grouping, I don't know, what am I doing? Grouping by... You can tell I'm not going to get there, can't you? So, yeah. But you can. So there's a lot of metrics around that. That request and that event, you can. That's tied to a lot of other information as well. So maybe I can just drill into this. I'm just going to keep trying stuff, and this is going to go badly. So this one here, I can see all of these custom events. I can see that occurred on an Android. Well, there's a couple on a Windows, mainly Android. So if we drill into one of those, for example, there's a lot of other information in this custom event. See, it was a browser. Is that? Yeah, there you go. All telemetry for that user session. So I can drill into your actual session and see what you did. So you did 180 page views. I'm assuming this is you, but 180 page views. Awesome. Thanks for that. You like the app? There's a, I should have kickstarted it or something. So you can see all of this stuff. You can even see, I've got a dependency on my SQL. You can even see like the SQL hits that occurred as a result of your individual request. So there's a lot of information you can drill into. Now, obviously, this raises some privacy concerns. You've probably got to let people know that, you know, this request here maybe. So this is, you know, an argument. I can't really drill into that, I don't think. But because I can log my own events and my own data, if you're doing things like logging people's credit card details when they click on buy, that's probably not something that you can do without telling them, or at all, I would say. So you've got to be a little bit careful. But so all of the data is there, is the answer to the question. I just don't know how to manipulate it because I'm not a BI kind of person. But yes, it is there. So you could change this graph to tell you what you wanted to know. All right, so I'll show you the code that's actually doing this. There's our exception stuff and our configuration stuff. So where would this be? So the lion one, I'm gonna do that in our data layer. So when we actually increment our count, by the way, and remember I said that this is demo code, don't write your code like this. So I'm basically saying if the ID I get from the increment count thing is lion, then just add a new metric of one and track this event saying that the lion was selected. So basically I'm doing these granular events, things that I specifically care about. And you can do these on a broader scale as well. I could obviously have just done a metric saying somebody selected this stuff and then just keep metrics of what everybody's selecting as well. So there's a lot of stuff you can do there. The actual home link, I'm doing that a different way. So this is the .NET side. This is the server side. For the home link, I'm actually doing that on the client side. So in our layout, you can see Application Insights added this JavaScript at the top of the page. And if you're familiar with something like Google Analytics, you'd be familiar with this kind of concept where you instantiate a JavaScript object using the SDK, JavaScript SDK, and you talk back to Application Insights and send those events. Now, it's got a track page view from the client side anyway. So it will know when the page actually hits the client rather than when the request hits the server. So you get that information. And I've just done this really naive JavaScript, sorry, not even JavaScript, jQuery, thing saying if somebody clicks on that first link in the navigation, then just track this home link clicked event. So I can do stuff in my on my client side as well, which is really useful if you're using SPAR apps or something like that. Can anyone see a potential problem with this? So the problem is that's a link that goes to another page and I'm submitting some data. I'm not 100% sure that all of those are going to get through. The page might refresh and everything gets dropped depending on the browser anyway. So that you've got to be careful about what kind of events you log this way. If you're moving to a different page and then expecting some JavaScript to run to log an event, maybe it won't work. So I was kind of expecting no clicks on that home link, partly because of that reason as well. But if you're using a SPAR app or something that does a lot of client-side stuff, this is a great way of tracking the same events from your JavaScript side, or from the client side. Cool. Any questions on that yet?
Offline.
Offline mode? That's a very good question. At some point, it's got to be able to connect. But whether it manages the stuff, I don't think it's going to with the browser, obviously, but that's a connected one. I haven't played a lot with the SDKs of the other devices. Do you know, Richard? No. I'll find out. So ping me afterwards and I'll try and find out about offline stuff. Yeah. So the question was about impacting performance. If you've got it attached to an API or something like that that's got a high load, how will that impact performance? It's kind of difficult to tell. I haven't, with the occasions that I've used it, I haven't really noticed anything huge. It's sending really small bits of information. So you can even see, we'll just do this. You can even see, if I go to DevTools, wow, that's small. If I go to DevTools, and how am I going to do this? Oh, we'll just go to a page view. So you can see this track request. The actual amount of information that sent was content length 0. That's impressive. So that's doing a track. There is one that sends data, I think. There we go. Content length 49 bytes, I think. So that's tiny amounts of information. The actual processing stuff, all it's really doing is packaging up a bit of data and then just hitting an HTTP endpoint. So the impact on your application is, the application insights telemetry is not going to be the slowest thing on your server side if you're tracking it with the API. It's obviously hard to tell how much impact it's going to have. If you're tracking a lot of events, then maybe it will have an impact. But I haven't noticed much of a slowdown at all. I think it's generally pretty safe to just throw at your application. The same question, though, goes with the offline stuff. If it is building up requests and then going to send them all in a big bunch when it connects again, that might have a bit more of an impact, but I don't know about that. Yeah.
Firewall?
So the question was about firewalls, and the answer is pretty much the same as any other networking thing. If your firewall is going to block that hit to Application Insights, it's not going to track any data. And there's, frankly, nothing you can do about that. There's no proxy system or anything like that. So that's the story at the moment. I'm fairly sure it's just an HTTP. Yeah. So that's HTTP dc.services.visualstudio.com v2 track. So that's usually not a problem. If you're not allowing your web server to make HTTP calls, it's a bit weird, but So that's all it is. It's literally just a package of a small amount of data that gets sent over HTTP. It's very lightweight. Cool. All right, so that's our tracking events. Like I said, the other SDKs for the other systems will have very similar events like this. So whatever objects you get in your Java or your iOS or something with your iOS, you know, 35 character object names and things like that, you'll have like a track event thing where you can send the same information the same way. Out of WinForms, what did, yeah, so the question. Yeah, so the question was WinForms, things like that, what do you get for free? And again, I haven't used it a lot for the non-web stuff, but my guess would be you don't get much, if anything. For the most part, the web stuff, the web application stuff works because it's very tightly integrated with Application Insights. Like an ASP.NET web application and Application Insights, they know each other really quite well. If you're in Troy's talk as well, you would have seen he did this thing where you can just do SCM, I think. So animalwars.scm.azurewebsites.net. And you can actually see in the configuration of your Azure web app that it's got Application Insights telemetry stuff embedded in the application, so it knows a lot of stuff already. With WinForms, it's not going to have that same stuff. So here we go, app settings. And we can see Application Insights instrumentation key. Azure actually knows that this web app is using Application Insights, so it's very embedded. But with your WinForms apps and iOS apps and all that kind of stuff, it's not going to know very well. Like, for the most part, you're going to have to send these bits of information yourself, is the kind of short answer, yeah. There is, did you say?
Yeah, that's the keyword, assistance channel.
Ah, awesome. So the comment was, persistence channel, there we go. So this is the offline story, is that right?
Yeah.
There you go. Windows desktop. Oh, by the way, you can see ASP.NET, Java, JavaScript, and then other. Other contains a lot of stuff. So Windows, so when you actually set it up, you can tell it what type of application it is. And then I'm guessing the persistence channel is here somewhere. There you go. Should have just gone straight there. Right, there you go. So there's an offline story there. So persistence channel is the keyword. Thank you for that. Always good when somebody in the audience knows the answer to a question that I don't.
Google is my friend.
Google, yeah. You mean Bing. Bing is your friend. Yep. I just Googled it on Chrome, so. All right. Let's just make sure I've covered that. Cool. All right, so let's move on. We've got about half an hour left. Cool. So that's usage, and you can obviously see we kind of strayed a bit from that topic, but you can see how people are using your application in production using your code. Like I've been saying, there's a lot more to this. Like, this is a fairly shallow layer over the top of what Application Insights is. There's things like other performance metrics that just get tracked with Application Insights. You can start tracking your own metrics about CPU usage when people are clicking buttons. There's tons and tons of stuff that you can put in there. There is a concept of deployment markers as well. There's a NuGet package. If you just have a look for Application Insights deployment markers and how to implement them, there's blog posts that will show you how to do it. But what that basically means is when you deploy a new version of your application to a web server or to anything like that, you can mark that deployment at that time, and then your telemetry will know that there was a deployment of this version at this time. So if your CPUs jumped up after this deployment, you can link those things together and say, this deployment introduced an error, or this deployment introduced some issues. So that's really handy as well. Some of this stuff can kind of link to Power BI as well. I don't know whether anybody's seen any Power BI sessions yet. I forgot to look at when they were. But that's some really cool stuff. So you can start to get some of this telemetry into that environment and have beautiful graphs that everybody can marvel over while not quite understanding what they mean. There's also a few other things you can do. There's if you're running this in IIS on a web server as well, there's a tool that you can install on that machine, which works very much like some of the new Relic stuff as well. And it will start collecting telemetry on IIS without you having to modify your code at all. So you can apply that to existing ASP.NET applications running on IIS, and it will start tracking the out-of-the-box stuff. Yeah. So the question was, if you've got multiple applications that kind of work together, so maybe like a web API and a Windows app that talks to that web API, things like that, that telemetry key is kind of the thing that you need. So you could track your events against the same telemetry key, and it would start, you know, it would consider those the part of the same application insights instance. So you could see immediately this request, well, something happened in a web app that somebody was using. Sorry, let's start that again. Something happened in a Windows Phone app, for example, or Windows Mobile. Can't remember what it's called anymore. A Windows Mobile device app. And then immediately afterwards, there was an API call from that same device, and you'd start to tie that information together as well, just by using that same telemetry key. Cool. All right, any other questions before we move on? Cool. All right, so there's a lot more to Application Insights. If you just do a bit of a search and see what's there, there's tons and tons of stuff. It's still listed as in preview, which means that stuff will change. Production ready, not entirely sure. I mean, I've had it running in production systems and it's fine. It's just that the cheese moves occasionally. But yeah, it's really powerful, and it will pick up a lot of stuff that you're doing and give you a lot of value. All right, so this is the kind of last bit. We're stepping a little bit away from Application Insights now. We're talking about what happens when this stuff occurs. So that imaginary animals, the vampire and demon and stuff like that, that application broke, right? So it's broken in production. Now, if you have a proper deployment pipeline, you can't just go and fix stuff in production. Hands up if you fix stuff in production. Oh, God. I was expecting nobody to admit to that, but it was like 10, 15 people. You're bad people. Don't fix stuff in production, despite what all the demos show you, deploying directly from Visual Studio and things like that. Terrible. There are tools that can help you do that kind of deployment stuff too. But obviously, if you have this pipeline and a lot of governance around what you're doing, you can't just throw stuff, you can't just throw that fix up. What are you going to do? Like, that's going to go through, you know, an all-hands meeting and, like, managers everywhere and all that kind of stuff. You've got to be able to handle these situations when they occur. So one of the things that is really useful is an idea called feature toggles. Have you heard of feature toggles? Yep. Okay, so a handful of people in the room. Do you guys use feature toggles? Generally? Yeah, okay. Still a few people. I'm going to show you what it is, and again, demo code. Do not write your feature toggles like this. But in our situation, or in our environment, we have this production error. I'll just go back to this. Where we click on imaginary animals and we get an exception. So if we've just deployed this feature, we just added the imaginary animals, we could be a little bit defensive when we write that feature and work out a way to kind of roll that back if it's not working as expected. Now, this is really naive code, obviously, but what I've done is I've got this application setting, so configuration setting called preview features. So the way I'm going to deploy my application is I'm going to deploy to production, but that's going to be, like, the new stuff is going to be called a preview feature, and it's going to have a way to turn it off if stuff's not working. There's a bit more to how you would generally do this, and you can expand on this idea a lot. I'll talk about that in a sec, but for the moment, I've got this preview feature setting. It's set to on, and in production, it's set to on. And in my... What do we need? We need the... Oh, no, here we go. So here, when I've got these links to the different types of animals, I've wrapped this new feature, this imaginary animals, just in this if feature toggle.showPreview features. This is, again, really naive code, but all it does is grab that application setting. And if it's on, we'll say, OK, we'll show this bit. If it's off, we'll turn it off. All right, makes sense so far? So we've got this in there. It's listed as on by default, so everybody can see this. We start seeing these exceptions, right? And we will need to do something about it. So in our web app, we can go to Animal Wars again. We can have a look at all our settings and then our application settings. And just in case you didn't know you could do this, there's app settings that you can set in your configuration file, in your web config, in your production environment. So I can just turn this off and save it. Now, this is an ASP.NET classic application, or ASP.NET, not vNext application, which means it's not, you know, building on demand. It's going to have to recycle the app pool and all that kind of stuff that it used to do. So this is actually restarting the application, but it's not a complete deployment of my application, right? I don't have to go through that deployment cycle or do the terrible thing of editing it directly in production. This is a configuration setting. So if I refresh this, that guy's gone now. And this is the same code, it's just a configuration setting, right? Now, the way that you probably want to implement this in your organization is a little bit more detailed than this. You'd probably have a management tool, use a database, or that kind of thing. And so you can go in and start turning features on and off on demand. You might even extend the idea and start using what's called canary deployments. So canary deployments, which are usually just deployments of your application to a handful of people so they can see it. But you could do it using feature toggles as well. Deploy the application, if it's just a web app, like everybody gets the same web app, but certain people have these features turned on, so they can test it. A lot of companies do this kind of thing. So they'll deploy the application, they'll turn all the features off, or the new feature they've developed off by default when they deploy, and then they'll start switching it on. Make sure everything's okay, and then once they're confident that the new feature works as expected, they flick it on for everybody. That make sense? It's a pretty cool idea. It's really powerful, especially if you can get a management tool that can manage these things. You can go even further and deploy to different environments and say, for these people, they'll hit the new API, and for these people, they'll hit the old API. If the people hitting the new API start getting exceptions, switch them back, turn that off, work out what's gone on in your own time. It's a really powerful way of managing these things. And it means you don't have to go through the deployment cycle, and it means you can manage these things that happen in production. So you combine that with the application insights alerts, like the exception alert I was getting before, and you say something's wrong, let's turn it off and work it out in our own time. Cool. So that's something to think about with your own applications. One more thing that I want to talk about as well, which is kind of related, is the idea of blue-green deployments. Who does blue-green deployments at the moment? Yeah, a couple of people. Okay. So the general idea is, and this is going to become a lot more popular as things like Docker and containerization and so on become more popular, because rather than just deploying some code that runs on a server, you can deploy the entire platform that your application runs on and blow it away if you don't need it anymore. So the idea is, let's say we've got our V1 application, and it's running on a set of servers that we call our blue environment. So we deploy this, everybody looks at that environment. Our users, when they hit a URL or when they hit the API or something like that, they're talking to this blue environment. We do some work as developers, and we deploy a production-ready system to, let's say, our staging environment, which we call our green environment. So we've got V2 running in green, right? The world is looking at two, we're running our tests on the green environment, everything's fine. When we're confident it's ready to go, we just do a DNS change or something like a VIP swap in Azure. And so the world now points at your new version, and the old one can be blown away, or you can use that as your staging environment and start deploying applications to it as well. The cool thing with this is if something goes wrong with your green deployment after everybody starts hitting it, the way to back out is to point at the old one. Now, this is simplifying things a lot, right? If you have data and stuff in a database, this is not as easy as the little arrows and things, right? If you've made data motion changes or schema changes and things like that, you need a way to back out of those as well. I don't have a slide on it, but a common technique for that kind of thing is to do staged database changes. So I was working at a company a while ago and we had this issue. We needed to deploy to another environment and then switch everybody over. And everything was fine until we needed to make a schema change. So we had this table which had these three columns, and then in the new schema, those columns didn't exist anymore. So what we did is we created a view. So this is in our new version. We created a view which mimicked the old table. And so you do this in two stages. You deploy it with the view. The old application now talks to the view. It can understand. It gets the same schema, the same columns and so on when it does its queries. And then when you switch to the new application, it ignores that view and uses the new table that you've created, or the old table. It gets a little bit complicated, and it's not going to be something that somebody's going to come out and have a magic bullet for it, a silver bullet for it. It's something that you just have to think about when you start writing your applications this way. But it's definitely worth the effort, based on the fact that you can just switch these things back and forth. A lot of architectural changes that you'll probably need, and a lot of work that you'll probably need, but much, much easier to handle issues when they come up in production. Does anybody do this kind of thing at the moment, these staged deployments where there's a halfway point? Yeah, a few people. So you guys would know it's hard to do, right? You got to think about it every time.
Deployment slots.
So Azure as well has the concept of deployment slots too. So that's really handy for the blue-green deployment stuff. You can deploy to this slot, and if that one's currently production, deploy to a different slot, and then just swap them. So Azure has a lot of this stuff built in. It's really handy to do that as well. Cool. Any more questions about the idea of blue-green deployments, that kind of thing? I want to talk really briefly as well. I'm not the guy to talk about Docker and containerization and things like that, but I will say that that's an area to keep an eye on, especially with this kind of deployment story as well. In the next few years, even in the next few months potentially, maybe even by like Thursday 2 a.m., it's going to be the case that your application is no longer just the code and the assemblies and things that run on an existing platform. Has anyone heard the phrase cattle, not pets? All right, it's one of my favorites. It's the way people treat servers. So if you treat your server like pets, that means when they get sick, you repair them and you want to make sure that they're okay and you patch them and everything's nice. You want to keep this thing alive. Cattle, though, and apologies if you're a farmer, like if a cow gets sick, then you shoot it and get another cow, right? I shouldn't own cows, I think is the lesson. But the idea is you should treat your servers like disposable things, and that's becoming much more common. Things like Docker will take that out of the equation at all. You just have a series of hardware that stuff runs on, and you deploy everything you need with your application, and if it doesn't work, you blow the whole thing away and do a brand new installation. So it's not upgrades. There's no state of the existing application because you're deploying an entire new instance. If you're not on board with the Docker stuff, keep an eye on Windows Nano Server as well. That thing is super fast to get a VM up and running. I saw a demo a little while ago where somebody did it on stage, zero to a Windows Nano Server VM up and running and serving pages out of IIS in less than 30 seconds. So whose deployment takes longer than 30 seconds now? I mean, if you can build an entire new environment to run your application on in 30 seconds, then you don't have to worry about, well, the database is in this state on this server and all that kind of stuff. It's an awesome way of thinking, and it's an awesome way of deploying your applications. All right. So we talked about, or I talked about the, you guys didn't talk much. It seemed kind of one way, actually. I talked a little bit about the idea of a life cycle and feeding the stuff from your production environment back into your developers' hands, even if you're sitting behind this gigantic wall that people have built so that the developers can't ruin anything in production. We had a look at some stuff that App Insights can do, including a few things that I would hope, and we saw some hands, I hope you start implementing pretty much straight away. That ping test is glorious. It doesn't have to run on Azure, it can run on anything. So that's awesome. Checking outages and things like that. Some ways to track exceptions from your applications, whether they're web apps or not. And then usage tools as well. App Insights is never really going to be a total replacement for something like Google Analytics, so the funnel stuff and people click on here and go here and then here. You can probably maybe hack it to do that kind of stuff, but it's never going to be a competitor. That's not what it's about. It's about analyzing your applications as they're running in production a bit more than how people are using the applications and whether you're meeting sales targets and all that kind of stuff. It's built for developers. But it does give you some useful usage information. You can start tracking your own events and getting telemetry from production rather than just your test environments. And then just at the end, I spoke a little bit about the idea of feature toggles, which is really cool. You should definitely look into it. It definitely helps, especially if stuff goes wrong. And then the idea of blue-green deployments and kind of the whole idea of deploying your application as a singular container rather than upgrading your server pets as well. Cool. So that's me. Are there any questions? I think we've got about 15 minutes. Plenty of time for questions if there are more. Yeah. The question is, how does this fit in with the existing Azure diagnostic stuff? So the web app stuff and the that kind of thing? I'm not sure. Sorry, I'm not quite getting the question. That's all. Can
Azure diagnostics, where you add it
yep.
to trace handler to the exception team?
Right.
Send it to the total storage and
I don't know heaps about that. Can we talk about it in after this? Yep. Guys, anyway, that's me. If you want to ask me some more questions, I'm around for about 10 more minutes here, and I'll be around all day tomorrow as well. So, thanks.